A group of experts and scholars have concluded that senior government officials have covered up crucial facts about what really happened on 9/11. They've joined in others in common cause as members of Scholars for 9/11 Truth because they are convinced, based on their research, that the administration has been deceiving the nation about critical events in New York and Washington, D.C. These experts suggest that these events may have been orchestrated by elements to manipulate us into supporting policies at home and abroad. Some of the inconsistencies even have to do with Flight 93. That was the plane that crashed in Pennsylvania. Did it crash naturally by the fighting that was occurring in the cockpit? Was it shot down? Will we ever know? I have a clip that is pretty emotional. I'm going to play it for you. It runs 4 minutes. If you don't think you can take it, I suggest that you go away for 4 minutes. I was listening to it with one of our engineers tonight, Bill Hickey. And he says, it's got to be one of the most emotional things I've ever heard. Here it is.
Frank Lely, United 93, is at your 350. Intermittent lights up. United 93 checking in, 350.
United 93, 350, roger.
United 93, that traffic to you is 1 o'clock, 12 miles east on 370.
Negative contact, we're looking at United 93.
Somebody call, please. United 93, verify 350. United 93, verify your level 350. United 93, verify your level of 350. United 93, Cleveland. United 93, Cleveland. United 93, do you hear Cleveland Center address, please? United 1523, did you hear your company, did you hear some interference on the frequency here a couple minutes ago, screaming?
Yes, I did, 797, and we couldn't tell what it was either.
Okay. United 93, Cleveland, if you hear the center address.
An American 10CC, a ditto on the other transmission.
American 1060, you heard that also?
Yes, sir, twice.
Roger, we heard that also, thanks. I just wanted to confirm it wasn't some interference.
Is that 956?
Rejected 956, go.
I was just answering your call. We did hear that yelling, too.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, we're just trying to figure out what's going on. Calling Cleveland Center, you're unreadable. Say again slowly.
Did you hear the transmission where they
said
he had a bomb on board?
Say again, was that United
93? Yeah, that transmission he said was unreasonable. It sounded like someone said they have a bomb on board.
That's what we thought. We just we didn't get it clear. Is that United 93 calling? Sector 956, that aircraft we believe was transmitting is 12 o'clock, 5 miles, turn left, heading 225. I'll get you away from him. Okay, he's climbing, so I want to keep everybody away from him.
Okay, I think we got him in sight.
So the 1989, that traffic view is at 11 o'clock and 15 miles southbound, 41 climbing. Looks like he's turning east while heading 360.
Hi, he's a captain. I would like to order to remain senior. We have a bomb aboard and are going to back to the airport and have our demand. So please remain quiet.
Okay, it's United 93 calling. United 93, understand you have a bomb on board. Go ahead. Director 956, did you understand that transmission?
The affirmative, he said there was a bomb on board.
And that was all you got out of it also?
Affirmative.
93, go ahead.
That aircraft you can't get a hold of, has he turned to the east now?
He's just turned to the east also. United 93, you hear Cleveland Center. Okay, American 10-6 and Executive 956, we just lost the target on that aircraft.
Okay, 956, we had a visual on him, just standby.
Do you have a visual on him now?
We did, but we lost him at the turn.
You can make a turn back to 220 heading, let me know if you can see him.
He's still there. We got him for 956.
He's still there? Northwest of you, about 25 miles?
Affirmative for 956.
He's active 956, fighting 180.
Hey, we're making a turn for 956. He appears to be heading right towards us.
American 1060, do you see anybody northwest of you? Can you shoot back that far there?
We're looking now, sir.
United 93, Cleveland, do you still hear the center? United 93, do you still hear Cleveland? United 93, United 903, do you hear Cleveland? United 93, United 93, Cleveland. United 93, United 93, do you hear Cleveland Center?
Do you see any activity on your right side, smoke or anything like that?
probably 2 o'clock. It appears to be just a dark cloud, like a puff of black smoke.
So all of us who have flown planes can only imagine what was going on in that plane on that fateful day. In a moment, James Fetzer, who will stay with us throughout the entire program tonight, and also David Ray Griffin. He will be our guest this hour as well. Stand by on Coast to Coast AM. James Fetzer is Distinguished McKnight University Professor of Philosophy at the University of Minnesota in Duluth. He is a former Marine Corps officer, author, editor of more than 20 books, founder and chairperson of the S911T. That's the organization we're talking about, Scholars for 9/11 Truth. James, welcome back to Coast to Coast.
Oh, George, great to be back with you. Please call me Jim.
Oh, you got that right. And also David Ray Griffin is the Emeritus Professor of Philosophy of Religion and Theology at the Claremont School of Theology in Claremont Graduate University, author, editor of some 30 books, including The New Pearl Harbor and the 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions. David, I'm glad you're able to come back and join us. How are you?
I'm fine, George. Good to be back with you.
Likewise. Likewise, indeed. What I'd like to do, Jim, and also David, is give both of you just a moment to make a brief opening remark of why you were so compelled to come forward again with this information. You, Jim, why you are part of Scholars for the 9/11 Truth, and then David, of course, get a statement from you as well, and then we'll get into our discussion this hour. Go ahead, Jim.
Well, George, once you look at the evidence, it becomes apparent that the only problem with the official account the government has provided of the events of 9/11 is that it's just fine if you're willing to believe impossible things. Laws of nature cannot be violated and cannot be changed. They include, for example, the melting point of steel, the highest temperature at which kerosene-based jet fuel can burn, the rate at which masses move in free fall versus masses moving in the path of resistance, the temperatures of molten metal found 3, 4, 5 weeks afterwards in the sub-basement levels of the World Trade Center, the kind of damage that would have been inflicted on the Pentagon if it had been hit by a Boeing 757, the behavior of the government in retrospect, the events of the Flight 93 you were describing. I had residents of the area calling me to explain that they told the FBI they heard explosions in the air, but the FBI wouldn't write them down. I had residents of the area write letters to me and tell me that they were taken to an area way outside of the officially designated crash site, and that the deputy sheriff said that while they were bringing them out to look for aircraft wreckage and human debris, that if they told anyone, the sheriffs would deny it. I have a friend who was a former inspector general for the Air Force who used to investigate air crashes, who told me that if that plane had crashed the way it was officially described, its debris should have been distributed over approximately one square block. In fact, it's distributed over 8 square miles. We have reports, in fact, the plane even may have landed in Cleveland, that a Boeing 767 out of Boston made an emergency landing in Cleveland Hopkins International Airport, that the mayor reported it was supposed to have a bomb aboard. We have multiple reports that cell phone calls are not possible from these aircraft at the altitudes and speeds they were flying. The whole thing appears to have been a sham, George, a sham. The American government appears to be manipulating the American people on the basis of acts of violence and threats of violence in order to instill fear into the population to manipulate them for political purposes. It all appears to be corrupt. And if those of us who have special abilities and expertise to analyze these situations and to explain them don't explain them to the American people, then I'm afraid the population has no way to know what's actually going on here.
All right, and James will be with us for the entire program tonight. We'll be taking your phone calls in the last hour with Jim Fetzer. David Ray Griffin, why don't you give us your overview of this situation?
Well, presupposing everything that Jim just said, when I first got into this, I was motivated primarily simply by the question of truth. That is, it seemed like the official story was not true for all the kinds of reasons Jim gave, although it took me a while to work myself into those. But more and more, I've seen how much everything this administration is doing that most of us are opposed to including the attack on Afghanistan and Iraq, the Patriot Act, the dismissal of the environmental problems of the world in favor of seeking empire. All of these things are justified by 9/11. We keep hearing that anybody who objects to the administration is thinking in pre-9/11 terms. And so these wiretaps, everything is justified by 9/11. And this administration has done so many things, one could rattle off a dozen things that should have brought impeachment, should have brought an uproar, but nothing has thus far brought them down. And I've thought for some time it might only be the truth about 9/11. That's the one truth the American people and the Congress would not stand for. And so I've been motivated in large part more recently by those considerations.
You know, it was strange timing, David Ray Griffin and Jim Fetzer, with the situation with the United Arab Emirates company and the ports, because though I can't say they're related with what we're doing, at the same time, it does create the confusion. And the big issue here is the lack of information. And that, I think, is one of the biggest problems that Congress has now over the UAE port situation. And that's the fact that it seemed to have been done in a cloak of secrecy. And with what you've been talking about tonight and what we're going to get into, it seems like it's the same kind of secrecy.
Well, everything is secrecy with this administration, George. If you go back to that energy task force that I think was plotting out the foreign policy of the United States, we're not even allowed to know what it is. This is a problem parallel to the CIA. When the CIA operates in secrecy, implementing a foreign policy of which the American people are completely unaware, how can we know whether we even approve of the foreign policy of the United States? It appears to be one of oil acquisition abroad, that we have gone into Iraq to control their oil. The oil, I bet you, is being pumped out. It's not even being metered. And we're hearing reports about an attempt to take the sliver of Iran that controls 90% of the Iranian oil. This is all quite disgusting, and it appears to be largely predicated on the desire of Iraq and Iran and Syria and possibly Venezuela, too, to go to petro-euros rather than petro-dollars, which means that whereas in the past the American dollar was related to a gold standard or later a silver standard, now it's related to a oil standard. If the dollar is decoupled from oil as a unit of measurement or purchase, then it's going to be basically in free fall. I think that the rich friends of George W. Bush are desperate to ensure that that doesn't happen, and that the true motivation for what's going on in the world has a great deal to do with trying to preserve accumulated wealth and very little to do with actual threats from abroad.
Why does it seem to me that people now are at a point where they're just fed up?
Wow. I'll tell you, George, you go back, all the lies this administration has told us from the beginning. I mean, look at what Bush did when he first came into office with those massive tax cuts for the rich. He actually utilized the Enron technique of telescoping profits. What Enron did, what got them into trouble, was they'd have a contract that said in 5 years you'll have a $10 million profit. And they wrote it down on their books as though that $10
million was already there. Yeah.
Yeah. And what was going on? I mean, Clinton had put us on a trajectory for these massive surpluses. It was spectacular. It was stunning that he had accomplished this task. Bush simply treated those projected surpluses as though they were already on hand and claimed that he could cut a trillion off. Do you know, George, that if in fact it weren't for those massive tax cuts, our budget would basically be in balance except for the war, which they're running off the budget anyway?
True.
And then global warming, George, my God, they pulled us out of the Kyoto Accords. The best scientists worldwide all agree that global warming was a threat to the planet. Pulling us out for the sake of short-term profits for companies that consume fossil fuels is putting at jeopardy the entire human species, George, the entire human species. Once you get an interruption in the food chain at any level, all species above that level are destined for extinction. This is happening now. It's the concern is whether we've already reached the point of no return.
And so I assume what, everything you've just said, Jim, is somewhat related to this 9/11 situation.
Well, the 9/11 situation all appears to have been born in part out of ideological beliefs that the as the sole superpower in the world, the United States had the ability to project its power and create an empire that would exceed that of any previous dominion over the world, and that there were enough of these neoconservatives, as they called themselves, that actually came into power. They had a document they wrote that spelled out their plans. It's called Project for the New American Century. It was published in 2000. And George, not just Bush himself, though his brother actually was a member of this group, but Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and Condoleezza Rice, and you go down the list, these people came into power with a plan to project American power around the world. And a central element of that plan, George, was to occupy the Middle East and use it as a base of power around the world.
All right, let's talk about what happened. Let's get your views, both you, David Ray, yeah, Griffin, and Jim Fetzer. This hour is going to go by quickly. I want to get David's perspective, especially this hour, Jim, in as much as you're with us for the whole program. Let's talk about some of the facts here surrounding 9/11, the inconsistencies, and what both of you feel to be why we didn't get what you believe to be the full story. David Ray Griffin, let's start with you. What do you see as some of the most compelling things that stand out, why you think there's something wrong here?
Well, there are so many. One is the fact that the official story about the World Trade Center just makes no sense at all from the point of view of physics and chemistry. Another is the fact that the story about the attack on the Pentagon also does not fit with the physical facts, that there was not the kind of damage caused that a 757 going several hundred miles an hour would have caused. And eyewitnesses have reported that there was simply not the debris, whether outside the building or inside the building. And then Bush's behavior, or particularly the behavior of his Secret Service that morning. So those are three of the big ones, but there's quite a list.
All right, well, let's talk first and foremost about the buildings coming down, because that seems to be a major issue, and let's talk about the science portion of that, if we can. Part of the argument is Popular Mechanics, by the way, one of the only publications to try to back up the official version of what happened. Steel, we all know, melts at a certain point. It didn't get that hot, did it?
No, right, George. I mean, the steel melts at about 2,800 degrees Fahrenheit. The fires, however, could have a maximum temperature of approximately 1,800 degrees Fahrenheit if they had a lot of pure oxygen available. The fact that the dark black smoke was burning from those buildings is indicative that they were oxygen starved and never reached temperatures close to 1,800, which would still be 1,000 degrees below the melting point.
Okay, could the steel, David Ray or Jim, could the steel have weakened because of the heat?
Well, that's the official theory, and one of the few things that article in Popular Mechanics got right is that it's a red herring to be talking about the idea of melting, because even though a few of the early stories and TV shows suggested the steel melted, the official theory has always been, no, that it weakened the steel sufficiently that through some process or another. I mean, there are different theories. The 9/11 commission presupposed one kind of theory. The more recent report by NIST gave another theory.
Hold on to that thought, David. We'll come right back to that when we return on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Jim Fetzer, David Ray Griffin, our guests this hour. David, let's go back to you, talk about the structure, if we can. If we can assume that in the history of engineering, a steel frame high-rise never collapsed because of a fire, how could we have three happen in one day?
Well, that's right. The odds against that happening would probably be about one in a trillion. So that's one big problem. The other big problem with the official story is that even if you say that it didn't, you know, the steel didn't melt, but it just weakened – the collapses would not have occurred, even if they had been possible, in the way they occurred. For example, if steel softened, it would start to bend and sag. And yet, as you see from the video clips, all three buildings have a sudden beginning. There's a very sudden onset to the collapse. Then the collapse is straight down rather than the buildings falling over. They fall at virtually free fall speed.
Well, could that have been because of the weight from each layer of the building?
Well, that's the official theory. But one problem of that is the next characteristic is that these were total collapses. So the 110-story Twin Towers collapsed into a pile of rubble only a few stories high. Building 7, which, of course, was not hit by a plane and did not have significant fires in it, collapsed in the way of a classic implosion into a very tiny pile of rubble.
And that's the one where the owner was overheard of saying, you know, we brought it down or something like that?
Well, Silverstein, the owner and the one who had taken out a lease on the whole World Trade Center just a few weeks before it had been finalized.
And he had a three-something billion-dollar insurance policy on the lease. Is that true, Jim Fetzer?
3.5. Absolutely right, George. And Underwriters Laboratory, by the way, just to complement what David has been saying, had certified the steel used in these buildings for 2,000 degrees up to 6 hours before it would show any significant weakening. Well, most of that fuel burned off in those gigantic fireballs we all saw when the buildings were first impacted by the aircraft.
Somebody had told me, Jim and David, that they cut corners in the World Trade Center and provided inferior steel. Can you buy that argument?
No, I think that's nonsense. These were admirably constructed buildings. In fact, they had marvelous load redistribution properties. Frank DeMartini, for example, who was the project manager, explained how they could withstand multiple impacts from the largest commercial airliners then available, which were Boeing 707s. The 767s are very similar in their size, mass, and other dimensions. He said that the effect of one of these aircraft hitting one of these buildings would be like sticking a pencil through mosquito netting. So neither the impact of the planes nor the fires, which, by the way, burned only very briefly. Remember, if they're certified for 6 hours up to 2,000 degrees before they even show significant weakening, the South Tower fell in less than an hour.
True.
And the North Tower in only about an hour and a half. So there simply wasn't enough time for that steel to be heated and to melt. In fact, steel is an excellent conductor, George, which means that if you heat one part of it, it rapidly dissipates to other parts, so that in order for the government's theory to be remotely plausible, you'd have to be simultaneously weakening or melting the whole floor. And remember, those buildings were designed to withhold those structures. They were very solid. There were 47 massive columns that went up the center of those buildings and another 240 around their perimeters. They were some of the best built structures in engineering history.
Well, I've got to tell you, in St. Louis, where I hail from, there's a company there called Spiritus Wrecking, and one of their major functions in life is to bring down buildings. And so I've seen a lot of video of their work. And I do have to tell you, on that morning of 9/11, when I saw those buildings go down, it looked exactly like a demolition.
Well, that's very good, George. In fact, you know, David mentioned how Larry Silverstein told this fire chief or whoever that he thought there'd been so much death and destruction, maybe the best thing to do was to pull it, and that then they watched, the firemen made the decision, then they watched it come down.
All right, if they did pull Building 7, maybe that was the right thing to do. So why is that a big issue?
Well, because we were talking about 5:20 in the afternoon, about 7 hours after the other events. It wasn't hit by any aircraft. It only had a couple of very modest fires. It was one of the most massively designed buildings in engineering history, from all I can tell. The support beams there were absolutely solid steel, which is highly unusual. It was constructed over a huge electrical generator providing electricity for lower Manhattan. It had a command bunker in there that had its own air and water supply, George. This was a building that just was not going to come down.
So,
and if you stop and think about it, in order to pull it, there had to be pre-positioned explosives.
It's something you just couldn't do in 7 hours.
Then. Absolutely not.
All right, now, what about the argument that because there was so many I guess, confidential things in that building. It was pre-wired to go down. Of course, I got to tell you, I wouldn't want to work in a building if I knew it was loaded with explosives.
Well, it's very, very strange, you know, what's going on here. There were all kinds of, I mean, CIA, Secret Service, I mean, the emergency management office there. Giuliani was in there apparently observing all this going down. He said they were warned that the towers were going to collapse, which is quite bizarre by itself since this had never happened before in the history of structural engineering. So who's giving him this warning for this completely unexpected event? The fire teams are in the buildings. They don't have any reason to believe they're going to collapse. They're saying they can easily control these fires with a couple of lines.
Okay, if the buildings were taken down, how did they get the explosives in these buildings? I mean, first of all, the amount of explosives would have had to have been huge.
Well, actually, that's a very interesting question. There were all these security anomalies in the 2 weeks leading up to 9/11, where various parts of these buildings were shut down. The employees were told to go home.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they shut off the normal security controls, including the cameras. Stephen Jones has calculated that it would have taken 40 men 10 trips to plant enough explosive to take these buildings down per building. So it's not really that massive project. Plus, they were, you know, people, there were many reports about these teams of so-called engineers going in and out of the buildings, and they claimed that they were replacing cables in the buildings, but it had never happened before.
Okay, what about the two planes that hit the two towers then, in the poor souls that were on those planes?
Well, David, what would you like to know about them, George? I mean, one hit at the 80th floor, right?
I mean,
South Tower.
You're not denying that the planes were hijacked, right?
I'm not denying, no. We're not denying that the four planes were hijacked by 19 alleged Arab hijackers. At least that's the official story,
George. Sure.
And let me make it very clear. The official story is extremely interesting for the following obvious reason upon reflection. When you have two or more individuals coordinating their efforts to bring about an illegal end, they are engaged in a conspiracy.
Sure.
So the government's own theory here that these 19 guys under control of a fellow off in a cave in Afghanistan pulled this off is obviously a conspiracy theory. Now, from our analysis of the evidence and so forth, it's a hopelessly untenable one because it's not defensible. But notice how the government tried to resist even having any investigation whatsoever. It's like what Bush is saying now. He wants to look forward regarding Katrina, for example, not analyze what actually happened. I don't see how you can be the security president without analyzing what happened so you know what went wrong so you can make sure it won't happen again.
Okay, I just played a tape of Flight 93, the one that crashed over Pennsylvania. And, of course, as you know, there's a controversy over that plane. But, I mean, I could distinctively hear someone with a foreign accent saying, bomb, bomb. Now, I mean, are you saying that that didn't happen?
Flight 93?
93, yeah.
Well, 93 actually appears to have been shot down. I mean, remember I was explaining how I was called by residents of the area who told me they heard the explosions in the air. There's not the debris is scattered over 8 square miles, George. That's inconsistent with the idea that it crashed. As an inspector general for the Air Force confirmed to me, there's even a report of a Major Rick Gibney, who was with the Happy Hooligans and famous Air National Guard unit out of Fargo, North Dakota, was transferred over to Langley temporarily, may have shot it down. Now, interestingly, I was on a program the other day with a fellow who actually had made that report, who said now it had turned out to be false, but I didn't get to pursue it. All he means is Gibney today is denying it, but that's very typical.
All right, but if it was shot down because it was hijacked, I sadly enough, don't have a problem with it. I mean, I might have even, if I were running whatever part of government needed to make that call, I don't think we would have had much of a choice, do you?
Fair enough, George, about 93, but then why does the government lie to us? But we're not entitled to know what actually happened?
Well, I guess like TWA Flight 800, which I think also went down under very suspicious circumstances, I don't think they want us to know that they had to shoot down a commercial plane. I don't think they want us to know that maybe Ramzi Youssef and his group took down TWA Flight 800 for fear and panic. I don't agree with that. I think we should be disclosed everything.
Well, I think there's a different reason they don't want us to know about TWA 800. All the evidence I have suggests that it was brought down by a missile fired from a submarine during a training exercise, and they sure as hell don't want us to know that, George.
Well, that's possible. I'm going to go on that case with the Peter Lance theory that the Ramzi Youssef and his project Bojinko, that he wanted to do that. He was on trial at the same time. That's another issue. Let's not take away time from this. Okay, so let's go back just a little bit. Planes have been hijacked. They're heading for the two towers, all right? Do you believe that there are people in those planes? Some people think they were drones. Nobody was in there.
Do I or does David? I would say David and I think, both believe that there were passengers in those planes.
Okay, all right.
George, I mean, the whole account the government has given us violates laws of nature. It's an impossible account. The melting point of steel could not have been reached. The fires weren't hot enough. They didn't burn long enough. They couldn't have even weakened, as David was pointing out. It would have caused an asymmetrical sag. It wouldn't have caused a complete collapse. Look, if I went to the top of the building, say a 110-story building, and released a grand piano, it would reach the ground about the same time those buildings came down. But the grand piano is falling through free space, no resistance whatsoever. It's not physically possible that the building could have fallen at the same rate as that grand piano unless all the resistance had been blown out by the floors beneath it. It's not physically possible.
What about the concrete of the building? Some say that it was all pulverized. That's not supposed to happen in a mere collapse. Is that true?
David can elaborate at length on
that, right.
But let me make the point that, in my judgment, this is the smoking gun. You have this huge cloud of debris at the top. Remember, you release that grand piano. You expect it's going to fragment and shatter when it hits the ground.
Sure.
Similarly, for Building 7, okay, it didn't make this huge cloud of dust basically until it hit the ground. But Twin Tower 1 and 2 were the opposite. They're like exploding from the top. You have seen massive debris being blown out horizontally and even upward, George.
True. That's
completely
true.
Physically inconsistent with one floor falling on another.
All right, David, the react to that.
Well, I mean, that's right, and it's exactly what you would expect if very powerful explosives were used to slice the steel. And that's the only way you can explain how you had this total collapse when these buildings had these massive steel columns, particularly the core columns, the 47. You would require quite a few slices in the steel. Well, such powerful explosions are going to pulverize the concrete and virtually everything else in the building. People have reported that at Ground Zero, all they saw, for the most part, was steel and dust. They didn't see tables. They didn't see computers. They didn't see much of anything. Everything virtually was pulverized.
George, I'd just like to point out that David earlier, when he offered that estimate of one in a trillion, was being very kind to the government, because the fact is that the effects that were being displayed here cannot have been brought about by the causes the government alleges, so that those effects on the government's official account, that is a combination of the impact of the planes and the fires in the one floor pancaking on another, has actually a probability value less than zero. It can't happen. It's physically impossible. So I introduced the term null, a zero with a bar from it. It's impossible. Can't happen at all.
React, if you can, to what they were saying about the plane that hit the Pentagon. Some people say it wasn't a plane. And I can swear, Jim, I've seen a picture of some plane parts out there in front of the Pentagon.
You've seen a picture that appears to have been planted. There is one piece of a plane that was actually photographed in different locations, George, that appears to have been planted. It doesn't actually fit on any part of a Boeing 757. In other words, you take that and move it around the fuselage, you won't find the place where it fits. What's missing, see, that entry hole is actually very small. Most people see these photographs after the upper floors collapse, but that was about a half an hour after the initial impact. The initial impact hole is only about 10 feet high and maybe 16 feet wide, about the size of the double doors of a mansion. There are unbroken windows in the immediate vicinity. There's fence there that's unbroken. There's all these cable rolls. If a 100-ton Boeing 757 with a wingspan of 125 feet and a tail that stands 44 feet above the ground had impacted there, there would have been massive debris, a huge crater. There would have been remnants of the wings, the seats, the luggage, the fuselage, I mean, you know, the bodies would have been all over the place. The tail, not even the engines were recovered. The only engine part was actually compatible with a much smaller jet. It was too big from a cruise missile and too small for a Boeing 757.
What do you think hit the Pentagon?
Well, it actually happens to fit an A3 Sky Warrior. It's a JT8D engine. And there was an independent report that some A3 Sky Warriors out in near Fort Collins, Colorado, at a small airport, were being retrofitted by teams of engineers, and they were designing them with Global Hawk technology,
really?
Missile technology, all kinds of stuff.
Those are drones, aren't they?
Pardon me?
Those are drones, aren't they?
Well, they can be remotely controlled, absolutely right. I mean, it's pretty tough for a pilot, no matter how conscientious, to deliberately fly himself into a building. The only few frames, you know, that the Pentagon has ever released, and it's stunning because if they wanted to, if you look at that building, there are cameras on that building, you know, every 100 feet or so around the entire perimeter. It's got to be the most heavily defended building in the entire world. I mean, these guys get $400 billion a year, you know. They're going to make sure they're secure.
Where's the video?
Cameras, right, cameras across the street. There's one frame where you can actually see what looks like it might be the silhouette of a small plane, and there's a plume that may be a missile fired from it just as it came to impact with the building that would be consistent with the sort of damage incurred. I mean, even the entire the inner structure, George, of the damage to the support pillars is inconsistent with a Boeing 757. Plus, see, either the Boeing came down at an angle, in which case there would have been a huge crater analogous to what you would see for other plane crashes around the world, or it came almost horizontally. But to hit on the ground floor, those engines would have been plowing up the ground or even the fuselage, George. That's why the fact that the lawn is perfectly smooth and green as a putting surface is extremely significant.
I agree with that, Jim. You're absolutely right there. There should have been marks from this plane skidding in. It could not. Nobody could have hit that with a direct hit that way.
You got it.
Well, David, we're wrapping up this hour. How quickly it goes. What would you like to say before you say serenara for the night?
I don't know. There's nothing just off the top of my head I want to add.
Other than you're convinced something was seriously wrong, and it's not the official version.
Well, yes, and the my second book on 9/11 is called 9/11 Commission Report: Omissions and Distortions, and it's simply full of stunning omissions, such as the fact that Cheney was already down in the underground shelter by 9:15, certainly by 9:20. Norman Mineta says it, but. The 9/11 Commission says, no, he didn't get down there till almost 10 o'clock, and that's very convenient because then he wasn't there when whatever was hitting the Pentagon was doing that, and he didn't have time to give a shoot-down order for Flight 93. One would think the news media, the mainstream media, would at least point out this rather obvious lie. But, of course, they don't.
All right. David, we're going to have you back again on another date. When we come back, Jim Fetzer will stick with us along with Morgan Reynolds, Dr. Morgan Reynolds. He used to be the chief economist for the U.S. Department of Labor during George W. Bush's first term. We're going to talk with him. Another guest joins us, Morgan Reynolds, Ph.D., professor emeritus at Texas A&M University, former director of the Criminal Justice Center at the National Center for Policy Analysis, headquartered in Dallas. He served as chief economist for the U.S. Department of Labor during 2001-2002, during the George W. Bush's first term. He's our guest in Coast to Coast. Morgan, welcome back. How are you?
Very good, George.
Good, good, good. First of all, when you served, were you appointed by George Bush, or was that under Clinton?
I was a political appointee in 2001 and 2002. I served for 16 months.
You did do that. How'd you get that? Did you know the right people? How does that all happen?
Well, I had the credentials. Let's mention that, too.
Sure thing.
But, yes, it did depend on contacts, and we'll call it insiders. And I served at the pleasure of Elaine Chao, the Secretary of Labor.
How did you get involved in this 9/11 situation?
Well, I left in 2003, January, and that was a free agent then at that point, and began looking at this, particularly stimulated by the invasion of Iraq, which I knew was based on lies. Many people knew it, including people in the Congress who went along with it. And then I asked the natural question, which is, if they're going to lie about this, what else would they lie about? And I remember that morning, I'd only been on the job in the Labor Department for 1 week, and I went to an adjoining office where a television was on, and I looked at the tower ablaze, and I said, that building will not fall. Now, I didn't see any of the news coverage subsequently because I, like many bureaucrats, was scrambling to get across the Potomac River, et cetera, and it was a chaotic day. But then I put it on the back shelf. And when 2003, when I started thinking about this and looking around the Internet, that's when I became suspicious. And then David Ray Griffin's book was a marker event for me, The New Pearl Harbor. I said, wow, he put it all together for me.
I think one of the problems that so many people don't face is the fact that of the addressing of Al-Qaeda. I want to get your take on that, and then we're going to bring Jim Fetzer back on and have both of you chat about this situation. But how do you view Al-Qaeda in this situation?
Well, I mean, my first question is, does it exist? Now, and if it does, they are patsies. The whole thing is a scam. Now, we know 9/11 is an inside job, a scam. But any job like that needs plausible villains. They aren't very plausible to me, but like OBL and at least Saddam Hussein was for real. But this business, I thought your Jim and David earlier conceded too readily that, these Arab hijackers did what was officially alleged, etc. Now, these, remember that the BBC has interviewed five of the accused 19 hijackers, and other mainstream media raised that total to as many as nine are alive, okay? There's a little problem in the details. Now, the whole idea that a couple guys in caves halfway around the world and 19 young Arabs who couldn't do anything right. They had no visible means of support. They constantly tripped the wires in the field with the FBI and other intelligence agencies. They couldn't manage to do anything right. The idea that they hijacked these airliners and flew them where they wanted to go, to me, is just preposterous. There is a very good article that appeared within the last day or two on physics911.net by Neela Segadevan about the impossibility of these guys who had no experience in cockpits of big jets to actually do what's alleged. You know, so it's not only the physical evidence that is impossible. These guys could never pull this off.
Well, let me ask you then about the tapes, the audio tapes and the videotapes purportedly of bin Laden and al-Zahiri.
Well, remember, OBL denied this, any part of this within days. It wasn't till December that the government pulled out this absurd video with this guy that's way too wide and he's got a gold ring on, and he's not left-handed, and all. You know, in other words, it's just a complete imposter.
So you actually believe that what we've been seeing of late of bin Laden, and beginning, I guess, back in that last tape we got from him before this recent batch was 2004, right? December 2004. Are you saying all this was just concocted, made up?
For the most part. Now, remember, OBL is a CIA concoction.
Well, that I know that. That's true. During the Afghanistan era, sure. That's absolutely true.
Whether OBL is alive or not, there are voice experts, the one at Duke, and there's one in Madison, Wisconsin, who's recently come out and said, these tapes are not OBL, et cetera. I have no expertise on it. But the point is that most of this stuff is simply the new Lee Harvey Oswalds, okay? When you pull off an event, a set of events, crimes so enormous, part of the deal is that you have patsies and all kinds of blind alleys to confuse people.
Is this the reason why we haven't found him? because we don't want to? Maybe he's not even around.
It's either that or he's already deceased. It's one of the two. Yes, there's no, with the kind of expertise in the world, there's just no way he can hide out. And we don't want, until, you know, they're trying to get this Zarqawi, or they need a big bogeyman that can succeed OBL. So they're not done with this image.
Well, what about, Morgan, I want to take the devil's advocate for a moment here.
Sure.
What about these so-called cells that were breaking up, the arrests of these people? What about Zacharias Massawi,
How many arrests and convictions have we had? The point is that it's all a huge diversion. Now, some of these people do want to do the United States harm. What's really at issue is their competence to do same. And if we go back to 9/11, which is where I want to focus, I'm raising all these reasons to doubt. Even this idea that they're going to throw the pilots out of the cockpit. First of all, they never explained us how they got through the door. Are you as a pilot? You know, a lot of these guys are all they're ex-military.
All right,
are you going to give up your seat?
No, of course not willingly.
Like one guy, the Burlingame. I mean, we're going to smack these guys. And this whole idea that they're coming at me with a box cutter or. Similar is just preposterous.
All right, so you tell me, Morgan, in your view, what do you think happened on, and let's just use any plane as an example, because...
Well, the one that's easiest is there's pretty wide agreement that Boeing, you already covered a lot of this, the Boeing 757 Flight 77 didn't go into the Pentagon. Now, it has to do with all the physical evidence.
Okay, assuming it did not, where the heck is it?
Well, here's the other kind of kicker. You know, pre-flight, it wasn't in the BTS schedule. Nothing fits.
What do you mean? What do you mean it wasn't in the schedule?
It, you know, every one of these commercial flights, departure schedule, et cetera, wheels down, et cetera, is in this Bureau of Transportation database. And Flight 77 wasn't scheduled that day. It wasn't in the bay. And the reason that this is done so meticulously is for liability reasons. So there are all these background problems that don't jive. Of course,
Are you saying that? Are you saying that there are no dead passengers from this purported flight, or that there are? First of all, I need to know that.
Well. My short answer is I don't know.
Not that I know the grieving victims' families.
I know one widow, and that's Ellen Mariani, and I believe her husband died on 9/11, supposedly on United Airlines Flight 175. But here again, if you look at the big picture, all the data, there's so many. Anomalies and difficulties. For example, the loads were so light; a majority of the seats on every flight were empty. And then people have been searching around at these Social Security death and birth indexes and not finding some of these names. It seemed to be fake.
Well, I mean, are you saying that there were no victims?
No,
on Flight 77.
What I'm doing is raising questions.
I know, okay? But where do you think that plane is if it didn't hit the Pentagon?
What plane? There is no Boeing 757 wreckage that we can treat seriously.
Anywhere.
Pentagon.
No, let's say that you're right. Let's say Jim Fetzer's right. Where's this flight that was supposed to have hit the Pentagon if it didn't?
Well, you're asking for Morgan to be omniscient. This is not the way a prosecutor works, for example. The burden on a prosecutor, and we can convict these guys. Our evidence is strong enough in a court of law. Our burden is to say, look, here are the uncontested facts. They have no other reasonable explanation but the perpetrators, the accused, committed the crime. We don't know everything. We, in fact.
All right. I mean, so that's what I'm saying, though, Morgan. You're at least telling me you don't know what happened to that other plane. If it didn't hit the Pentagon, you don't know where it is.
Or George, if we go to the Shanksville site.
Yes.
That
one in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, where the landfill is on the edge of the woods, where they say Flight 93, another Boeing 757. Which I've flown on one as recently as December, and they are very large.
They're huge.
They're 200 seats. They are 100 tons, basically. They're 60 tons dry. It's a lot. They're 660,000 parts. They're huge. They're 125 feet wide, et cetera. And you look at that hole in Shanksville, there is no way, George, that can swallow a 757.
So?
And the wing, people, we've got good eyewitnesses that say, yeah, well, it's 20 feet wide or so. It's smaller than the trailer in my front yard, you know, and it's 10 feet wide and 10 feet deep, you know, and it's a smoking hole. Witness after witness have said that. And then there's so many inconsistencies. Now, I do believe there was a commercial jetliner flying in the area. We have way too many disinterested eyewitnesses to that effect. One theory, as Jim seems to believe, is that that plane was shot down, but its debris seems to have been somewhere else, like the Indian Lake, and the authorities cordoned off New Baltimore. Maybe some of those folks talked to you, Jim.
Jim, let's bring you in now.
Yeah, thanks. Okay. Just to make one thing clear, I think that David and I both agree with everything that Morgan has been saying here. For example, in the 9/11 Commission report, Omissions and Distortions, David begins with the point that four, five, or six of the alleged hijackers have been found alive and well and living in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
And yet, ironically, the FBI has never revised its list.
No.
The same Neil Sagatovan has observed that no names of Arabs were found on any of the flight manifests.
Yeah, we couldn't even get a straight passenger manifest on any of the four flights.
And any listener out there wants to see the evidence about whether or not they could have flown this plane, this article by Neela that Morgan is referring to, it's on the st911.org website on the resources page, which also includes multiple studies about the cell phone impossibility of making those calls,
right,
even though they're highlighted in these docudramas.
Well, let me ask you this. If you guys were to poll, Mid-America, for example, about this theory, what do you think the percents would be in terms of whether this was an inside job? Let's not talk about the merits of who, but whether it was an inside job or done by an Al-Qaeda group. What do you think those numbers would be?
Well, I would bet, and a substantial minority would have their suspicions. When I ask people, are you satisfied with the official story, it's remarkable how many people are dissatisfied. But here's that points to one of the sad things about how far this country has decayed, and that is, back when JFK, and Jim is an expert on this, but when JFK was assassinated, the major media did polls right away, and about half of the people didn't agree with the lone assassin. They doubted the lone. Now, I don't think it's probably half, although we do have the Zogby poll for New York City and New York State, which where about half the people believe that the government knew more in advance than they were letting on. It's kind of soft questions like that.
Well, could you? Go ahead, Morgan.
Part of the problem is that so much of this is under the radar screen. It's treated with silencio. So I'd love to see exactly the poll you're talking about, George, done on a national sample.
I would like to see that too.
The fact is, George, that the national media simply isn't reporting what we know about this case, and it's shocking. I mean, you mentioned Flight 77. The fact is, on the recordings, the radar tracking of Flight 77 shows it up to the Kentucky-Ohio border. There is no radar tracking from the Kentucky-Ohio border back to the Pentagon.
And then apparently it just appears.
Then it just appears near the Pentagon. And the part that David Ray Griffin left out talking about Cheney and the bunker is that Norman Mineta, our Secretary of Transportation, observed a young officer coming up to Cheney and telling him it's 50 miles away, sir, it's 40 miles away, sir, it's 30 miles away, sir, do the orders still stand? And Cheney turns on him, nearly bites off his head, and said, of course the orders still stand. Have you heard anything different? And Mineta didn't know what he was observing then, but it had to be the plane approaching the Pentagon. The order cannot have been to shoot it down. That's like the most heavily fortified building in the world. It would have been shot down. The order had to be not to shoot it down.
Well, another relevant fact is that the air traffic controllers at Dulles testified that they all thought it was a military aircraft because of the maneuvers it was pulling.
And if it had a friendly transponder or signaling that it was a military aircraft, that could explain why it wasn't shot down, too.
Can both of you, who are part of this organization now, Scholars for 9/11 Truth, can you both accept the possibility that someone was working in tandem with Al-Qaeda?
Oh, George, it's much more overwhelming than that. I mean, if they had any inkling, they just piggybacked on it, maneuvered it, orchestrated it. It was done with much too much sophistication. These guys could not have flown the planes.
No, the cell phones were not possible.
Everything about it is a pack of lies. Everything about it is a pack of lies.
Al-Qaeda is a complete diversion from the real perpetrators.
So, I mean, are you saying Al-Qaeda doesn't exist?
Well, we got Russian general says Al-Qaeda doesn't exist.
Hold on, guy. You're stepping on each other.
George, we got multiple reports about this from foreign perspectives. We got a Russian general, for example, who says international terrorism is a ruse.
Well, I'm not so sure, though, Jim, I would believe a Russian over...
I wish I could tell you that we don't get more straight scoop from Pravda, for example, on this matter than we get from the New York Times. But that's the sad state of affairs.
Now, this goes much further than I think George suspects based on my assessment of his questions. And that is, George, let's go back. And do you believe that there was an Iran-Contra problem, you know, a conspiracy?
Oh, yeah. I think that's very possible.
We have a Watergate conspiracy?
Absolutely.
Well, okay. Now, what about the Gulf of Tonkin?
Absolutely. I think that was contrived.
Okay. And what about the famous assassinations in the 60s? I wonder who did those.
I'm not doubting those either.
And if there are major terrorist events that either provoke war or crackdowns, I wonder who did those. Do you think Al-Qaeda, these bumbling Arabs, pulled off these events? Like, let's take the London bombing, subway bombing.
I think they could have been hired hitmen, Morgan. I think that's possible.
Oh, okay. Working for Western intelligence.
Whomever.
Okay.
I think that's very possible. I think what they found was a group of idiots who wanted to do themselves in for the sake of their god, and maybe only the pilot knew about it. I'm not even sure the other passenger hijackers knew about it. Stay with us. Morgan Reynolds, Jim Fetzer, and I'll be right back. Jim Fetzer, Morgan Reynolds, our guest. Jim will be with us next hour to field your phone calls. Morgan and Jim, if what all of you have been saying tonight is absolutely true, one has got to then assume that this has been one of the most incredible public schemed manipulations I've ever heard of, if it's all true. Would you agree with that?
Right, yeah. It was an outrageous, over-the-top crime, and all roads, I believe, in the 21st century lead to 9/11, and it's just eating away at the underbelly of America. And when you point to Al-Qaeda, one of my thoughts is that the government spokespersons promised a white paper to prove that OBL and his 19 sturdy villains did the job. They never produced that, nor did the Brits. And then, of course, the 9/11 Commission, David Ray Griffin's disposed of that, shredded it nicely. And how did, if the Arab hijackers did, how did they manage to have arrange for a day where the Defense Department stood still, for example, or arrange for no crash investigations, where the NTSB, the FBI, it's easily proven what plane crashed with these unique serial numbers on all the time change parts. That's within an hour, they know what plane it is. Or how did they arrange the Secret Service, for example, to violate its standard operating procedures down there in Florida with the president, where he just continued on with his photo op?
Okay, well, what do you think happened to the plane? Let's go back to the planes that hit the two towers. There were Jim admits he believes there were people in those planes. There were victims. As a matter of fact, my mother's sister's brother-in-law, okay, if you can follow that, he was on one of the planes. His name was Douglas Dowell, and he was going from Boston to New York. He was going to be studying computers, and he was going for a course. So I believe there were people on those planes who hijacked them. Who was flying them?
Well, if you go that route, there are various ideas about having people gassed and remote controlling the planes instead of the hijacker scenario. Or and these things get complicated. They violate the KISS rule, which I think is a handicap for these alternative theories, none of which are established. But that you would substitute drones. They proposed that in Operation North Woods, for example, that the Joint Chiefs of Staff proposed in 1962. Mm-hmm.
Public document now.
Right, right, which didn't happen because it was vetoed by the Kennedy administration, but it does show what our military is capable of now, doesn't it?
Yes, I agree.
And there are various theories that are – this is a very contentious area of 9/11 research.
Now, George –
yeah.
My understanding is the two types of aircraft employed here, the 757s and the 767s, just happen to be the only ones equipped with flight management systems that allow them to be pre-programmed using global position satellite data, so that, in fact, the idea of them being drones may be preempted here by the possibility that they actually had a flight path programmed into them. Without any doubt, these Arab pilots could not possibly have flown these planes.
They couldn't fly a 172 Cessna.
Well, I know a frequent guest on Coast to Coast, John Lear, has told Art that even he, as an expert pilot, could not fly one of those planes into the building like that.
Nice point. Now, when you put this all into the broader context, these guys told us what they were going to do before they came into office. They laid their blueprint out for protecting American power around the world in the Project for the New American Century. You can find it online.
All right,
and their document was, ironically, September 2000.
All right,
within 12 months, they got their wish of a nuclear
Harbor. Let's assume then that remotely somebody took over and took control of these planes. Do we or have we heard any air traffic control chatter between the pilots in air traffic control? Because I got to believe if the pilots couldn't control their planes and they see themselves going straight for these towers, they must have been screaming.
Do you realize, George, that the air traffic controllers' reports, which were on a tape, were destroyed? They cut the tape up into little tiny pieces and distributed it in multiple places so it would be totally destroyed? This was done by officials of our government?
That was a tape, Jim, at JFK Air Traffic Control, as I recall, and actually was a discussion among six controllers or so after the events. A roundtable type discussion, and the supervisor had it cut in a million pieces.
Has anybody found those air traffic controllers to try to?
Well, they're under a gag order, just as the fire department of New York City is, etc. They can't talk.
Now that gag order has for the firemen has just been overdone because the ACLU and other interested parties had their oral histories released, so that David Ray Griffin has written an important paper about it on the ST911.org website, where all your listeners, George, can find substantiation and the studies that support the things we've been saying here on this program in spades. Just go to ST911.org and start looking at what we have presented there. You can find just a superabundance of evidence for the things we've been talking about.
I am curious, Jim, since the Scholars for 9/11 Truth was formed, headed up by you, when you put together this distinguished group of experts and scholars, what has been the overall reaction to this group?
Well, we've only been in existence since 15 December, George. We had 50 members by the end of December, 100 by the end of January. We're over 150 now, I would guess. We're making tremendous impact. We are being picked up around the world. I've had an Irish reporter who writes for a Pakistani paper that publishes in English call me up at 5 o'clock in the morning. I've been interviewed by the BBC. We have a reporter for the Miami Herald writing about us. We have a Ukrainian editor and owner of a paper running a series on us, and the American Embassy, to my astonishment, actually responded to him and denounced us as Holocaust deniers, which I thought was very bizarre, because the Holocaust, of course, was a crime perpetrated, a form of mass murder perpetrated by the government. We're not denying that. We're actually affirming it. So in relation to 9/11, what appears clear to us is that the American government has been using acts of violence and the threats of acts of violence to instill fear into the American population in order to manipulate us for political purposes. If you look it up in a dictionary, that's a nice definition of terrorism, which means that our own government has been practicing terrorism on the American people.
Have you been cornered by people who scream and yell at you and call you, you know, traitors or whatever?
Oh, George, if I get 100 supportive emails for every 3 negative, and the negative ones are obviously very ignorant. They are just ad hominem streams of profanity. They don't have any knowledge whatsoever about the evidence or what we're talking about. So it's really strikingly positive.
How about you, Morgan? What kind
of
feedback
do you get? I think the Jim is doing a very good job, along with Stephen Jones, in terms of making waves and getting attention for the alternative theories and evidence about 9/11, and hopefully it will lead to justice. Although I've dedicated my life, my career to truth, to me, justice is the primary goal, and truth is a means to that. I want to see these traitors convicted in courts of law and punished to the maximum extent of the law.
There's some fairly obvious things, George, that could be done right off the bat. For example, there was unusual activity on the stock market of put options against United and American and Dean Witter, which had its offices in the Twin Towers. The stock exchange keeps exact meticulous records, and nevertheless, the government has never explained to us who it was put those put options, which, of course, is a form of wagering on the market that their stock is going to drop.
Go down, right.
That is formal information always kept in every case. Morgan could go into great detail.
Well, and then, of course, the CIA monitors that as an early alarm system.
You raised the question about the insurance that was held by Larry Silverstein. It just so happens, by the way, that the security company that had the responsibility not only for the Twin Towers but for Dulles Airport and United Airlines is named Securicom, and a member of the board of directors is Marvin Bush, brother of the president. So that there is
right.
reason
and Wirt
to think
Walker, a Bush cousin, it was the president, the CEO.
So there may be an insurance scam going on here. There are reasons to believe there were problems with the towers that had Larry Silverstein concerned, that it didn't have a high enough occupancy level, and it was loaded with asbestos, which is another reason why the fires from the planes.
Well, that's why so many thousands of people are still getting sick.
They're dying from it, George. They're dying from it. The EPA even lied to the New Yorkers. This is so criminal, it's unbelievable, and told them that that was not toxic dust when, in fact, the opposite was the case. It is a shock. And that the New York Times should ignore all of this is an atrocity and an abomination. Yeah. If there's any newspaper in the world that should be taking the lead in exposing the truth about 9/11, it is the New York Times, and it is a shame and an embarrassment that it is not doing that.
Jim, you are sticking your head in the noose. You and I got to know each other years ago during your investigation of the John Kennedy assassination. This one, you are going full force with.
Absolutely, George. We're putting all of our chips in the pot. This is for the sake of this nation. The soul of this nation is at stake. What this nation is all about is all revolved around 9/11, George. It's all there.
We're going to see if there's anything left of our country.
Well, I got to tell you, when you look at things like this move with the United Arab Emirates ports and the fact that a communist Chinese company run by its military is controlling a pier in Los Angeles, it makes you wonder about a lot of stuff.
George, it's stupefying. Look at it this way. If everything he's been telling us about this massive, Islamic menace for the last several years is true, then bringing this group in to run the ports is simply absurd. So that if bringing this group in to run the ports is actually a good thing, which he's telling us now, then everything he's been saying for these last several years is a monstrous lie.
Now, you don't deny the fact, though, that there are some organizations and groups out there who would like to annihilate us as a form, as a country, right?
Yeah, but most of them are pretty weak and feeble and disorganized.
Right.
The beauty of it, the point that Morgan was making before is this. In the past, we had international communism. We had the Soviet Union as the monster, so we could justify these huge expenditures for defense. With the loss of the Soviet Union, with the collapse of the evil empire.
Well, in portions at least.
They
yeah.
needed something to replace it for the military-industrial complex to survive. They have this country on a war economy. They needed something nebulous, something vague, something where they could call the shots. George, when you hear some explosion going on, like in Bali, and you read that it was terrorists, how in the world would you know that those terrorists weren't actually acting covertly on behalf of the CIA?
You would assume they're not, you would hope they're not, but you don't know.
But what I'm telling you, George, is we have massive evidence, overwhelming objective scientific evidence that the American government was instrumental in bringing about the death of up to 3,000 innocent Americans to motivate them to support a vast scheme of projecting American power around the world, which they admitted in their own document probably would never happen save for the occurrence of another Pearl Harbor.
Hold on. Would you say the American government or some members in government?
The neocons in strategic positions. Good distinction, George. We're talking about maybe 20 people that are responsible for all this, and the key names are Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Karl Rove, Paul Wolfowitz, Donald Fife, Condoleezza Rice, Jeb Bush, George W.
Dov Zakheim. By the way, it would take these would number in the hundreds to pull off 9/11. Although he's talking about people at the top.
When was this planned?
Well,
you can't do it in a week.
Look, I would take you back now. I agree with Jim that when the Soviet Union collapsed, our big foreign menace collapsed, and they needed a new one. Now, it's the clash of civilizations, in truth, the Muslim world is our big enemy, even though they won't describe it quite that way, right? They'll stop short of that. But if you look at the World Trade Center 93 bombing, that was definitely a softening up to believe that the Muslims are attacking an icon, a monument, a national symbol, okay? And there's been a whole trail of these leading up to 9/11. And what I go back again and I say, where is your proof that these 19 young Arabs did it when we've got all these, how did they suspend the laws of physics at these four sites, et cetera? You know, it's just, wow, we need a critical examination of these claims.
Yeah, well, what about the people like the Ramzi Yousafs in those people, the bomb makers who have been implicated?
There are people who do intend us harm. There's no doubt about that. Some of them are Muslims.
All right, so you admit they exist.
But this whole thing is just, you know, the teenage girl driving the old Camaro down the interstate is probably a bigger threat to you than all these plotters, you know, who simply are not capable of pulling off anything like 9/11.
God forbid.
You're a genius, George, to be able to precipitate the events that you then claim you're reacting to. It's part and parcel of what Karl Rove has boasted of being, creating our own reality.
Hey, as
while you're studying one reality, we create another.
The poison and the antidote are brewed in the same vat.
Do you expect another one?
We can prove this up.
Do you expect another attack somehow?
Well, the Madrid bombing was one great event in terms of saving or giving them second thoughts. because the Spanish then said, well, we're going to get rid of this government that's in line with Bush. In other words, this changes the it may not be a predictable response, partly because they've been in charge. You know, where's all your protection? So there are problems. But yes, I do believe they would do it when they need it. But even invading Iran, I think they're so arrogant that I don't think they think they need it, another big 9/11 type event to pin on the Iranians.
George, Keith Olbermann on Countdown reported a study they had done on MSNBC where they'd found on 15 different occasions when Bush's political fortunes were going down that there was a terrorist alert or an elevation of the terrorist color code within 2 to 3 days. It happened 15 times, and in not a single one of those instances was there actually a terrorist event that took place.
Well, stay with us. Morgan, I want to thank you for being on the program, and we'll just have to see how things unfold, huh?
Yes. Hey, there's a lot of hope. I'm very optimistic.
Jim Fetzer will stay with us. We're going to take your phone calls now as well, and you know, when this is all said and done, you're going to have to make up your own minds because this is a pretty shocking night. I'll be back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. If you want to email me, that's simple, too. That's george@coasttocoastam.com. My fast blasts are open, and I know a lot of you are on fire as well. So, but you know what? It's one of the luxuries of America. We do have the ability to say it the way we want to say it. And Jim Fetzer is, and Morgan Reynolds is, and in just a moment you will. And welcome back to Coast. Jim Fetzer, our guest, will take your phone calls. Jim, as we look at all this, you know what's also fascinating is still the polarization of this issue. It's still a hot issue, and it still shows me how divided the country is over this.
Well, it has a psychological dimension, George, because the very idea that the government that's supposed to protect you might in fact be abusing you, it's a lot like incest. It's something that is so traumatic, it's so devastating to contemplate that you know how many mothers deny that it's even taking place. In this case, it's so many citizens even deny that it's taking place because they're petrified at the ramifications. Psychologists call it cognitive dissonance, when there are beliefs that threaten your previous beliefs and you find it impossible to reconcile them, and denial becomes the role that you adopt.
It's almost as if it is true, we don't want to know it.
That's right. But we have to know. It's like cancer, okay? That claim that what you don't know can't hurt you has never been more false. This government has fallen into the hands of gross abusers. They're committing incest on the nation on a grand scale, and if we don't stop them, we are going to suffer the ravages. It's going to get worse and worse and worse.
Let's take some calls and other views. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
How you doing, George?
Good.
Hi, George.
Oh, this is Lisa and Victor.
Yes
from Wing TV. Welcome to the program.
Thanks,
thank
George.
You.
Wanted to bring you two on also very briefly just to express your views. I know you know Jim Fetzer quite a bit, and you've really devoted most of both your careers to this issue. Based on some of the things you've heard tonight, what do you think?
Well, George, everything they've said is so right on the mark, and I want to go back to a quote that Morgan Reynolds says. He says, we can convict them in court of law. Our evidence is strong enough. Right now, we have the awareness, we have the proof. It's time now to start taking action and doing something about this, to get this into a court of law and convict the people that were behind it.
And do you want to know something else, too? We don't have to use any conspiracy theory to do this, because we have Galileo and Isaac Newton on our side. The truth can stand on its own 2 feet.
Right. And our biggest fear, George, is that this case is going to become like the John F. Kennedy case. Everybody knows that Lee Harvey Oswald wasn't the lone nut assassin, but not one single individual who was responsible for Kennedy's assassination was convicted. We need to get the people behind this convicted. Jim Fetzer gave a whole string of names. I agree with every single one of them that he said. We need these people in a court of law, and we need to convict them.
Well, and unlike the Kennedy assassination, where most of these documents are sealed for the next zillion years, can we get to these kind of documents that might be needed?
Well, we can not only get to the documents, I believe, if there's some kind of court order, but just using the physics, along with Stephen Jones, Morgan Reynolds, David Ray Griffin, Jim Fetzer, and so many other independent researchers, if we bring this into a court of law, I guarantee 100% that there can be conviction.
Well, and as both of you feel, too, the science of this is very important, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And we must stress that the government has not brought forth any solid proof of any of its allegations regarding 9/11.
Yeah, and
absolutely none.
And one other thing we'd like to also stress is that this fall in September is going to be the fifth anniversary of 9/11. This is a big one. We'd like everybody to show their outrage with the lies that have been perpetrated and come to ground zero, come to the emotional epicenter. Last year we were there for the fourth anniversary, and the reception we got was phenomenal. People wanted to know the truth. And we need you, George, and all of the different independent media sources out there to spread the word and say, let's make a strong showing at ground zero. Let's get tens of thousands of people like there was at the White House last September 24th when there was approximately 250 to 300,000 people protesting the war.
And we feel this is very important because this administration is going to scatter once their time is up in the White House, and there are going to be new puppets in place. And these people are going to scatter to the winds, and our time is short.
Yeah, and we can't give Jim Fetzer enough credit. His group now,
absolutely,
Scholars for 9/11 Truth, has become the lightning rod. This is the best hope we've had yet, and we just hope that Jim, along with us and everyone else in the media, can push this forward to get people ground zero and get this case in a court of law.
Well, you're making people's eyes open up, and I think that's important. All right.
We thank you very much, George.
Appreciate you being
doing
on the show.
Thank you.
Jim, with you and your group, has anybody had their positions threatened or anything like that because you've taken such a strong stance on this?
Well, fortunately, the University of Minnesota has always been very supportive of all my research on JFK. What I must say in relation to Lisa and Victor's mild optimism, I'm apprehensive that this administration is not going to relinquish power, that they're going to use the occurrence of another a contrived terrorist attack in order to suspend the Constitution, that they're trying to undermine the posse comitatus law by all sorts of subtle techniques. I believe what happened with Katrina, I mean, they knew for days Katrina was going to hit, and yet somehow FEMA fumbled the ball. How could that possibly happen? FEMA was a marvel of the world under Bill Clinton. They could have made all kinds of responses. I believe they wanted to send in the military to make it look as though only the military could cope with a situation like this. It's the sort of thing they suggested regarding bird flu in having quarantines. They've suggested the military. This is a role the military should never play in American society.
You know, Jim, Bill Clinton wasn't a saint on all this either. I mean, a lot of things happened on his watch.
Oh, but I'm talking about FEMA being the marvel of the world when Clinton was in office. That FEMA was admired. It was rapid response to natural disasters. No, Clinton was no saint. But my God, I mean, what's gone on in this administration? I mean, this is raping and pillaging and looting the country, even the world, George. It's a shocking situation.
Next up, east of the Rockies, welcome to Coast, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hi there. Good morning, George.
Yes.
Yes, sir. I just have a quick question. As citizens watching this happen to us, what can we do, Jim? Well, how can citizens, besides, you know, talk about it and bring it aware of it, what can we do to prepare for this?
Well, there are two or three things I would suggest. Number one, this administration has committed so many impeachable offenses that if the Congress had any guts, any integrity, any intestinal fortitude, any commitment to the Constitution, he would have been subjected to an impeachment a long time ago. Number two, what that means is the Congress has to be reconstituted. The Congress has been co-opted. The Congress is completely corrupt. You have to vote, whether they're Democrat or Republican, vote every one of them out of office unless they can justify being returned, and you better have very stringent standards for that. Number three, if you're using electronic voting machines, you can forget it. They're all controlled by Republican corporations. They're dirty. They manipulate the vote. These guys learned from Stalin, who said it doesn't matter who casts the votes. What matters is who counts them. Those electronic voting machines, and I'm an expert in this field, are so easily contrived, it's ridiculous. This is shameful. And anyone who tells you that those electronic voting machines without paper trails are a good thing is denying you your democratic right to cast your vote. They are traitors to the country. Take my word for it. And finally, I believe that if there's an effort made to remove this party from office, they are going to resist it, and they're going to attempt to use the American military against the American people. I have therefore come around to the belief that the Second Amendment may be our most precious amendment, that every American should be willing to fortify his own country, because we may have to undergo a second American revolution.
I take it you're not a Republican, Jim.
What? George, I would be rightly described as a liberal, in the sense that liberals believe that everyone deserves representation, not just the rich. This administration has become so warped, so corrupt, it's violated every principle for which the Republican Party has ever traditionally stood. When I was growing up, my father, who studied politics at UCLA, told me Republicans believe in balanced budgets. They believe in constitutional government. They believe in a non-interventionist foreign policy. They believe in keeping government out of your personal life. This administration has violated every single one of those principles. I cannot understand why any Republican of any integrity would support this Bush clique in this administration, which has perverted the Constitution and is turning the country into a cesspool.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to calm down on this now, okay, and to take some of these questions, because I think you're getting too involved in it tonight. Is that fair?
Yep.
Wild Card Line, welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yeah, hi. I'm Bruce. I'm in L.A.
Hi, Bruce.
His passion is fine, because my passion is just as equal. I got to tell you, your argument, sir, is completely senseless. It's all across the board. You have no continuity, no logic, and you contradict yourself repeatedly.
Well, you want to give an example?
I'm going to give you several.
Good.
Okay. The neoconservatives planned and carried out 9/11, according to you. But you then go back and say that the Soviet Union was something that, because it collapsed, they needed something else, right? Well, Ronald Reagan was a conservative. He's the one that made the Soviet Union collapse. He's a conservative, so I don't get...
Well, Ronald Reagan wasn't... A spokesman for the military-industrial complex. I mean, he may have served purpose.
He was back when he was in office, according to the list.
Well, may I answer your question?
Yeah.
Eisenhower warned us about the accumulation of excessive power by the military-industrial complex.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that once the Soviet Union had disappeared...
Because of Reagan.
Which the CIA, by the way, did not predict, notwithstanding that we're paying it vast sums of money, there was a need here to find some new rationale...
But you're not addressing what I said.
To the military-industrial complex. I'm not saying the same individual persons were involved, but I am saying the same institutional interests were
involved.
Right,
but you're saying the same philosophy, but you're not making sense, because you're saying that the Soviet Union was the boogeyman and we needed a new one. But the same people that you're blaming now is the same philosophy, same party, the same conservative outview that made the Soviet Union collapse.
I think you better read the Project for the New American Century, because they lay out their blueprint perfectly for creating a new American empire, and they explain that there's a unique opportunity here. You can find it also outlined in Zbigniew Brzezinski's book, The Grand Chessboard. Zbigniew sketches the same idea of America becoming a colossus astride of the world. This was nothing that was contemplated in Reagan's day or prior to that. It's a neocon philosophy they've sought to implement.
Right,
they
right,
knew
right.
They needed a precipitating event, some traumatic event,
sir,
in order to bring the American people to be willing to make the sacrifices, both financial, monetary, and in terms of human sacrifice, of their young men and women to make it happen. They needed 9/11.
All right, here's a question. The first World Trade Center attack, you claimed, was all part of this to soften it up. Bill Clinton was president. How did the neocons get past Billy Boy to do that?
Morgan made that observation, and he and I might or might not agree with that. I'm talking about 9/11 now.
Where's Barbara Olson?
Listen, fella, can you change the laws of nature?
Where's
that
Barbara Olson?
Point of steel is 2,800 degrees
right,
Fahrenheit.
But that doesn't point to
the
any individual.
The temperature fires 1,800 degrees. Do you understand they've been
right.
lying to
but,
us?
Right, but what you're talking about, the physics,
do you understand
they've
been lying to us? Do you agree that the Twin Towers came down through a controlled demolition and not by the impact of fire and plane?
What you're saying is that's nature or that's physics, but physics is physics, but that doesn't make certain individuals responsible for those physics.
Well, who do you think was covering it all up? Did George Bush and Dick Cheney try to get to the heart of the matter, or did they try to conceal it and resist
even
an investigation of it?
Maybe some of it's national security, and it's not a cover-up, it's just, you know, when you're fighting a war against...
They wouldn't even testify under oath. I mean, you really aren't paying attention. They resisted this. They wouldn't have even had an investigation except for pressure brought by the families of the survivors.
I see. Kind of like when the Clinton administration, your favorite, who went and who was president during the First World Trade Center, went and killed all those women and children in Texas at Waco.
Oh, I think that was a very despicable act.
Thank you.
There have been Waco, Ruby Ridge, whatever happened in Oklahoma City. But what we're talking about tonight is 9/11. I'm not trying to exonerate Bill Clinton. I'm implicating the Bush administration.
All right, let's move on to some other callers. Gosh, this hour's almost already gone. East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Tony, and I'm listening to you on the AM morning waves. I'm a first-time caller.
Either you're out in Pennsylvania.
I'm calling from Bedford, Pennsylvania,
sure.
20 miles from Indian Lake. I had my 20th high school reunion there and grew up in Somerset Borough, the seat of Somerset County. I know all the people, Wally Miller, the coroner, and everybody who was out there in the crash and investigated it and combed the land. And there are a lot of questions, and it doesn't seem like it was a plane wreck that necessarily went whole into the ground. People around here do question
the official story.
But to suggest that it is a cover-up in the sense of, I don't know, a conspiracy to bring down the government brought on by the Bush administration, I find difficult to believe. In fact, I think that the guy and everybody under him are idiots, and that we, and all of your comments and your guest comments tonight presume one thing, that the government, because of who they are and where they are, know everything and are capable of doing this. And that is a cult of personality. I think George Bush, whenever, before he sold the Texas Rangers, was a bust. And he rises to power through modern media and being the selected one. We didn't go to war to Iraq before George Bush got in because the Republican Congress wouldn't let it. George Bush was a neophyte, and Al Gore would have won the presidency with the Middle East blown up in Iraq. There's a reason why. And I think 9/11 was simply a bunch of bumbling idiots, and the characterization of bin Laden being the mastermind, he okayed a general plan, and the mechanisms and the, you know, how to go about it was done on the field in modern countries, Germany, France, the Middle East, UAE. And so they took advantage of the American weakness of the cult of personality. But what I will agree with you on is that I think that the neoconservatives have taken 9/11 and have now usurped it or used it for ulterior purposes and to achieve foreign policy objectives that they could not win in an open debate pre-9/11. And that is where we are becoming victims.
You want to react to this, Jim, before the break?
Well, I'll take the good. I couldn't quite sort out the rest of it. I mean, you can look at what's going on here as a lot of bumbling incompetence like Katrina. You can look at the Iraq. I mean, what a mess we're in Iraq. You can look at the absurdity now of bringing this United Arab Emirates company into looking after our ports. What are they going to propose next? That our nuclear power plants be placed at the disposal of the bin Laden family? I mean, there's a long history here of George W. Bush being in the Bush family, being in business with Saudi Arabia. There's a very important book called House of Bush, House of Saud that every American ought to read. Just go on Google and read the summary from Publishers Weekly, and it'll send a chill up your spine.
All right, stay with us. But I'll tell you one thing. If we were in China, we wouldn't be talking about this right now. You'd hear just that. Stay with us. Jim Fetzer, our guest. We'll take the rest of your phone calls, our final phone calls, in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie. And again, if you need to email me, as thousands of you have done tonight, go right ahead at george@coasttocoastam.com. My fast blast is almost jammed here, but we can squeeze a few more in. Jim, what can you and your organization do in a very orderly, methodical way to try to get more information out in an official way? I mean, can you call for, can you get a new 9/11 commission, or is that never going to happen?
Well, the problem, George, is as soon as you turn to Congress, you get politicalization. We saw this with JFK, with the Warren Commission and the House Select Committee reinvestigation. We saw it with this 9/11 commission. There's not going to be a congressional resolution of this. It's going to require, for example, that the district attorneys and the attorneys general of the states where these crimes were committed should pick up the issue. I mean, you got great men like Elliot Spitzer in New York, and I have no idea if he's paying any attention to this. But no citizen can bring a criminal case. It's got to be done by the district attorneys and the attorneys general. If indictments were brought against some of these figures in the Bush administration, it could have reverberations that would be felt around the world. That would be a great thing. Otherwise, we have to reconstitute Congress. But my anguish over electronic voting machines is so profound because, see, these people are so clever. They're using our own taxpayer money to fund the purchase of electronic voting machines that are controlled by GOP Bush sympathizers. The Europeans think we're insane to allow a private country to control these electronic voting machines. I'm in the position of being a Luddite. These were a group, you know, who thought that machines were a bad thing. They took sledgehammers to knock them apart. I want to tell Americans, by God, if you're forced to use those electronic voting machines and they have no paper trail, take sledgehammers to them and trash them apart because they are depriving
Jim,
you of your liberty.
People will get arrested if they do that.
George, there are worse things than being arrested. We got to stand up for our country. I am.
By the way, I think the guy who was heading up Diebold, who promised to bring the election to George Bush, has resigned.
Well, there
sure
are
he
signs
is.
Here, but then the Secretary of State in California has just certified Diebold. It was done in the middle of the night. This is a terrible thing. I cannot believe it. But that in California, if something like that can happen in California, it can happen anywhere.
Yeah, I know. We're on that with Bev Harris, so we're not going to let that story die.
Great.
Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. Welcome to Coast to get us going. What's left of this time? Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
This is Gene from New Mexico. I was telling your screener that I agree with some of what your guest has to say, but some of the things I disagree with. One of the things I disagree with is metal will burn. I have been in the mechanic field for quite a few years now. I have seen trucks catch on fire from a fuel fire and literally burn and melt to the ground. The second thing I disagree with about the conspiracy theory, like on the thing that happened in New Orleans, is I was watching the History Channel quite a few years back. I did not know that it set under, below sea level. And me and my wife was talking about that. And it's like I said then, and we told each other, wow, if something was to ever happen there, why would somebody want to live below sea level? It's a disaster waiting to happen.
Well, they always thought that those pumps would work, I guess.
Well, common sense tells me that they might not work. And some of what he's saying, like I said, I think is true. But
well, what do you believe in?
He's on a bandwagon here also.
What part do you think is true?
When the towers come down, that was kind of suspicious. I'll give that. But then to have a cover-up, the major cover-up that he's talking about, I don't see.
All right, Jim, let me ask you this. I got an email during the top of the hour break from someone who lives in New York and says that the towers were built to go down and collapse that way in case anything ever happened to them so they wouldn't fall into other buildings. Would you accept that?
No. These were wonderfully constructed buildings. I mean, if you look at the photographs of them under construction, they're massive, they're impressive. And the way they came down, George, they were exploding from the top. Every floor was blowing out as they were coming down. They came down in 10 seconds. That's impossible unless there was no resistance whatsoever.
Well,
what they're saying is just wrong.
The part that really interests me is what you brought up about the fact that a security company had closed portions of the building and chased people out and shut down the cameras.
That's
I mean, that's
correct.
Weird.
Securicom, George.
Is that documentable?
His brother, a director.
Is that documentable?
Oh, sure.
It is.
Yes.
Our first time caller line, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, my name's Newt. I'm from Flagstaff, Arizona.
Hello,
long-time
Newt.
Listener.
Thanks for the call. Go ahead.
Hey, I think that the buildings must have been brought down by controlled demolition, because obviously a plane 80 stories up is not going to knock out the base of a building. And building number 7 wasn't touched by anything, and it fell in less than 7 seconds.
But, you're absolutely right.
But and then I've heard that the bomb-sniffing dogs were pulled off 5-6 days before the attack. But my question is, how come with all that debris, if it was brought down by bombs, isn't there chemical traces, et cetera, things like that? I mean,
they hauled everything away right away. That was another problem.
That's right. Even the fire chiefs in their magazine were saying this was completely wrong, that there had to be a forensic examination. It would have revealed the use of these explosives. The company that did all this was a very efficient company by the name of Controlled Demolition Incorporated.
There was... I guess an individual in the basement or somewhere, his name was Rodriguez.
William Rodriguez.
What did we know about him?
He was working in the sub-basements, and there was a tremendous explosion. A 50-ton hydraulic press was blown away. One of his friends had his skin blown off his body. This was a massive explosion in the sub-basements that occurred about the time that the planes impacted. It appears to have been designed to remove the structural supports from those 47 central beams, so that the buildings were then only kept up by the external steel supports, the 240, which were then blown away when they brought the buildings down.
Wildcard Line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Good morning, George.
Yeah.
Yes, I don't know if you're familiar with the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board.
Who's on that board?
That's the thing. There's been like two iterations of this. The first ones are, Brent Scowcroft was the chairman, and, you know, he was against the Iraq war, so he was more or less kicked off. So the rest of the members all appeared to be Bush donors, the pioneers, or they weren't qualified whatsoever in intelligence.
I don't know about this organization. How about you, Mr. Fetzer?
Well, you know, he has many advisory boards, and he can pay attention to who he wants or not, but Brent Scowcroft has been very critical of the Bush foreign policy. In fact, some of the neocons are starting to abandon the old neocon philosophy. Francis Fukuyama, for example, there's an article we just put up on the website for ST-911, who is renouncing their policy and saying it was a Leninist policy that presumed you could impose democracy on other countries, whether they wanted it or not, and he no longer believes it, and he thinks the whole thing was a mistake, and it was based on an exaggerated fear about Islamic fundamentalism that didn't exist, and he thinks the whole thing's a blunder. It's a fascinating piece, and it's just appeared.
So do you believe that Bin Laden just has faded away? He's gone, may never be found again?
Well, they needed the boogeyman. I mean, Morgan's absolutely right about that. He's of more value to them as a mythical figure than he is if he were, you know, if they had his head on a platter, because then an awful lot of Americans would say, well, justice has been served. But, you know, so much of this claim, the invasion of Iraq, was predicated on all of these misrepresentations, where you had one member of the administration after another just repeating 9/11 Saddam Hussein, 9/11 Saddam Hussein, 9/11 Saddam Hussein. It's a form of very elementary kind of psychological conditioning. There was never any evidence that Saddam Hussein had anything to do with 9/11. 15 of the 19 hijackers were Saudi Arabian. You would think that would lead to some major investigation of Saudi Arabian connection. Actually, that part was deleted from the 9/11 Commission report. They simply took it out.
I know.
You've got to ask yourself, what in the world is going on here?
Jim, I got to tell you, I may not believe or agree with everything that you've said tonight, or Morgan, or David Ray Griffin, and Lisa and Victor bring up some interesting facets of this whole thing. But I do have to tell you, there are some very strange anomalies in this whole thing, and things that are not right. They don't make sense enough, I think, where this thing should be opened up again and questioned in a much more thorough way. I think if David Ray Griffin, for example, had the opportunity to bring from his book alone unanswered questions, it would shock Americans if it were done in a committee form, don't you?
Yes. He's a magnificent human being. He's been carrying the burden of this message himself for years now, I mean, this organization now is really bringing him tremendous support, but, I mean, the man is magnificent. I can't tell you, George, how indebted I am to you for covering this. Frankly, I mean, if this were a Democratic administration doing it, we'd be saying the same thing. We are scholars. We are nonpartisan. And however passionate I may be about this, it's because this administration is abusing our country, and it just happens to be GOP and Bush. But I've explained why. These are not traditional Republicans, and I can't understand why any principled Republicans would support them.
I'll tell you one thing. I'm tired of being in this war economy. It seems like we've been in it forever.
Yes.
And, you know, I think Americans are tired of it. There's a tension here. And
George, on TV tonight, they were reporting that this war is costing every taxpayer $2,000 a year already. Just stop and think about what you could do with $2,000 a year. I mean, all this money is being diverted. It's being dumped into defense. It's being taken away from education. It's being taken away from – they want to privatize Social Security. All these companies are dumping their pensions. It's shocking. It should never happen. This is totally un-American. It's so unfair to the working men and women of this nation.
East of the Rockies, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Charlie from Ormond Beach. That's a suburb of Daytona Beach in Florida.
Hi, Charlie.
Hi, I'd just like to get a little bit of weight on the other side of this argument, and I'd like to ask these gentlemen a couple of questions and have them respond without being drowned out with other issues being raised in
all
the
right, go ahead, subject. Charlie.
Okay, first of all, I'd like to preface all this and say, to me, personally, it's my opinion, this topic, title of this topic tonight should be probably something more like, how can we demean the Bush administration so Hillary Clinton can be elected? Now, I'll ask my questions now. First of all, one gentleman called in. It was completely drowned out. I refuse to be drowned out. If this is all a sinister plot on the Bush administration, by the Bush administration, how do we explain in 1993 the Trade Tower explosions that went on there when the Democrats were in office? I mean, bin Laden and these and the Al-Qaeda and their terrorists must be real, okay? I mean, that's a fact. That occurred, and we didn't hear all these sinister plots and fabrication of a terrorist back in those days. And the other question I have was when they mentioned the New York Times, my gosh, the New York Times is certainly not a conservative paper. And the New York Times has not ever alleged that all this is some kind of a fabrication, sinister plot, and terrorists don't exist. And what would David Gregory say about all this? He would certainly take the opportunity to expose this as a sinister plot. It's simply a case of a bunch of Democrats trying to demean, in my opinion, trying to demean the Bush administration. It goes on and on. This was a surprise attack, no different than Pearl Harbor in a lot of ways, and more devastating, certainly. Those are my questions, and I'd love to hear an answer.
Okay, well, I'll answer for you the Al-Qaeda one, because I don't agree with Jim on that. I believe Al-Qaeda is out there and that it is a part of this. I do think there are some puppeteers involved. That's my take. Jim, but why don't you handle the New York Times
basically,
angle?
Al-Qaeda was a creation of our CIA as an anti-Soviet program in Afghanistan. I mean, the problem is how often these movements, you know, turn around to bite us. I mean, as far as what happened in 1993, I mean, I'm willing to believe that that was some little cell that had some you know, effort to make. They were totally incompetent, of course. I mean, their explosion didn't move anything. To think that they could have perpetrated, you know, individuals of that level of skill or ability. Hey, these guys who are supposed to have done it couldn't have even flown the planes. There are five or six of them are alive and well and living in Saudi Arabia. I mean, the cell phones can't possibly have been made from the aircraft. I mean, this guy is literally ignorant of all of the evidence that shows the sorts of things he's saying are completely and utterly false. And we are, look, Morgan Reynolds was the economic advisor to the Department of Labor in the Bush administration. It was a political appointment. He's a prominent Republican. David Ray Griffin, I'm absolutely 100% certain, is an independent. I may typically vote Democratic, but I make my judgment based upon what I think is best for the country. We are a nonpartisan group. It's objective scientific evidence that you can find on our website that has brought us to these conclusions. We aren't happy about it.
Well, there you go, sir. Any more follow-up?
Well, I just say that you're going to hear this rhetoric over and over again as we approach the elections, okay? And I just believe that George Bush, this was a surprise attack. It was like a Category 1 hurricane that went to a Category 5 overnight. What the heck do you do? No one would anticipate.
Well, let me ask you this, because it's very possible that he was totally in the dark about this, as he claims he was about this United Arab Emirates ports deal. As he's been saying, he said, I didn't know anything about it until it was done. Do you think it's possible, Charlie?
Yes.
Do you think it's possible that some people who are in this industrial military complex may have helped concoct this, whether it was with Al-Qaeda or not? And, of course, George Bush didn't even know what was going on.
Well, I think the president, you know, should be advised with his intelligence all the time. However, you know, I don't want to pick on Democrats, but I got to say that our intelligence community was just about wiped out during the Clinton administration's 8 years. I mean, we basically had no intelligence left.
He decimated it.
Bush had a pickup with an economy after that. And, you know, you mentioned things like the stock market. I was in the stock market at 27 and retired at 35. I'm no dummy. And I'll tell you one thing very clear about the stock market. It was a self-perpetuating success story for this entire country, diversified in so many different businesses. And when you talk about the stock market, it was devastating for a lot of my friends.
Well, I know, but his point was, though, somebody sold the insurance companies and the airlines short right before 9/11. Somebody knew that they were going to plummet.
Well, I tell you who bought a lot of puts was Bin Laden. You know, he made a lot of money off of this. It's just
But we'll never know that unless the Securities and Exchange Commission tells us this.
Well, it's no different than the Tylenol story. I met somebody that was in prison with the Tylenol guy. You remember the guy?
Oh yeah,
who was crazy?
The guy in Chicago.
He wasn't crazy at all. He made lots of money doing that because he knew. The Tylenol stock.
Interesting. Good point. Good point. Hey, we're out of time. The show's over. Jim Fetzer, this is not going to go away, but we'll talk to you probably as we get close to Kennedy assassination anniversary date again.
George, I can't thank you enough, and all your listeners, I urge them to go to st911.org and take a look at the evidence for themselves. It's all there laid out for their contemplation, and I just must say the future of our country is at stake. This is a desperate situation, and my grief is over the possibility that we're going to lose freedom and democracy forever.
And whether you agree with anything you've heard tonight or not is not really the major issue. The point is that we as free Americans have an opportunity to even talk about this. For Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Be safe, everybody.